Welcome to The Kentucky Psychologist, a podcast by the Kentucky Psychological Association. The Kentucky Psychologist will get into the minds of top psychologists from Kentucky, and occasionally friends from across the country. We will talk about what leading mental health experts are interested in and excited about. Hear about all the ways psychologists in clinical practice, research, leadership, and applied settings are improving and saving lives. Hello, welcome everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Kentucky Psychologist. We are lucky today to have Dr. Carrie Jones with us to talk a little bit about what she does. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad that you can make it. So I just want to start us off by having you introduce yourself a little bit, talk about what you do on KPA, and also just what you do for your work in general.
Sure. So I am a private practice psychologist currently. I have my own solo practice, not like super creative. So it's just my name. I don't have like a fancy cool name for it. It's just me. But I see folks from a variety of ages and referral issues. I do individual therapy and psychological testing here in my private practice. With KPA, I currently serve on the executive board as the secretary. So it is my job to take notes on everything and make them clear and concise, not only for our board, but for other members to be able to look back on minutes and see what we're up to.
Awesome. Very cool. Okay. And how did you get into that?
Which part, the practice or the executive board?
The executive board.
So I kind of fell into it. I kind of got into KPA for the reason that I do most things, and that's relationships with people. So I'd been approached a while back by our current president, Patty Whiter. She's an old friend from grad school, about getting a little bit more involved in KPA. And so I started to do that just a little bit, just kind of following along and joining. And then last summer, Eric Russ and I co-led a webinar together after the catastrophic flooding in Eastern Kentucky to try to help folks understand some of the things that they might be experiencing emotionally and psychologically. And when Sunny Mays wasn't able to complete her appointment last year because she moved, Eric and I kind of formed a good relationship and worked well together. And he tapped me on the shoulder to complete her appointment for this year. So I kind of fell into it, but I've really, really enjoyed my time with KPA.
Okay, awesome. That's glad to hear. I didn't know about that webinar. It sounds like a really powerful experience.
It definitely was. Just because, you know, resources, I live in Eastern Kentucky and resources here are really slim. So, you know, if even 50% of the folks, or 25% of the folks who were affected by that flooding needed services, we probably wouldn't even be able to cover that here. So Eric thought it was a great idea, and I totally agreed to just put out some psychoeducational information to help folks deal with that in the aftermath and let them know like what was normal to experience and when to become concerned and seek further assistance. So it was a great experience, and I hope it was helpful for the folks that needed it at that time.
Okay, gotcha. What was kind of the reception from folks who attended or, you know, watched the webinar?
Yeah, I think it was positive. We were able to also disseminate it to some groups who were doing some work, boots on the ground, which I think was helpful that they were able to pass along. So I think that overall it was a positive response. And it was something that Eric had also done when there were tornadoes in Western Kentucky. And, you know, that was, they were having to do some mental health first aid and response for that too. Unfortunately, a webinar like that has been useful multiple times over the past few years here in Kentucky. So he was sort of a veteran at that, and it was my first time trying it, but hopefully it was helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, it's unfortunately our time and age, right? That those kinds of things are picking up.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that it's really cool that in times like that, that psychology can step up and be of assistance. So,
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to ask you later about kind of what advocacy means to you. And I kind of already hear it in this piece of community outreach and education. And I'm curious what that looks like more on the regular in Eastern Kentucky about how you can tap into that community.
Yeah. Sure, of course. So for me, advocacy is just thinking about how there could be things going on that aren't directly affecting you, and it could be far away from you, and it could be right down the street for you. So there are things that impact folks' lives in negative ways that might not be directly affecting me right now. So it's being able to sort of zoom out and think about what's going on and how you could be of service. And I think for folks here, and this is probably the case everywhere, when you're doing advocacy work, asking the people who it affects how they need help and what way help would serve them the best, and not thinking that we have all the answers all of the time, because a lot of times folks know what they need. And so I think for me, advocacy is utilizing whatever group it is that needs help to figure out for them what they need and what would be the best path forward, and how we can be of assistance alongside of them and not take the whole thing over.
Yeah, I like that collaboration piece. Sometimes people can come in a little too headstrong.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, Eastern Kentuckians, as a culture, we like to help each other, you know, and people coming in from the outside thinking they know everything doesn't always go super well. So being able to sort of help from the inside and asking folks what they need and what would be best, I think usually goes a little bit better.
Definitely. Do you have any like examples of how you do that on the ground?
Sure. So one of the things that I've done since I've been here is speak at some of the high schools and talk about different things. Like I went to one of the local high schools here where my main office is in Paintsville and talked about the transition to college for some of the high school seniors, and how to access mental health services. It's a really small school, so I was able to get a better understanding of where folks were going to college and give them contact information for the counseling centers there and other resources on campus that might be helpful to them. Just sort of bringing psychology to the general population. You know, if you don't come in for therapy or you don't need psychological testing, that's fine, but that doesn't mean that psychology can't be helpful or beneficial to you in some way. So just trying to help folks understand where psychology can be a benefit and come in and help you in times of need. So,
yeah, I love that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I also, I have a background in teaching. I taught at the UK counseling PhD program for several years, and I'm not teaching this year. And I told myself, you know, I'll just take a break from teaching. And that was a silly thing for me to say because I knew it wasn't true. So I am going to be teaching a dual credit course at one of the high schools here this year in psychology through Morehead State. So I'm excited about that, just being able to access a younger population and talk about the roles of psychology and lots of different places in our world and possible careers in psychology, and hopefully get people excited about the field.
Yeah, that's kind of cool too. I can see that in and of itself as community engagement too, right? Just like putting it out there as like, here's just more information about psychology in general, like access resources as you need or want.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very cool. Okay. Well, shifting gears a little bit, I'm wondering if you could talk about just some challenges you faced generally in your career in psychology and how you overcame them.
Yeah, I think a career in psychology is just challenging for more reasons than we probably have time to get into today. But I think early in my career, I was maybe a little too focused on trying to prove myself in some way, like that I knew enough or that I belonged, that I was competent. And I think that's not unique to a career in psychology. I think a lot of people who are young in their careers probably feel that pressure a little bit too. So I just had to really work through the need to know all the things and be able to fix everything and fix every problem and tie a nice neat bow on every single situation I was in. And I think over the years, having good supervisors and consultation with other providers, I have been able to come to a level of peace with just being a part of someone's journey. Not every single person's going to leave my office or my care with every single thing in their life resolved. And I could be someone's final destination at some point where, you know, they tie the ribbon around their therapy journey. But most of the time, I'm just going to be part of it and play a role and just becoming okay with that, with not being able to fix everything or be the expert on everything. I think people don't go into graduate school or professional school because they don't want to be the best at everything they do. That just comes with the territory, but finding a peace with not knowing everything all the time and just being okay with that.
Yeah, that sounds like a good place to get to.
I'm not advertising that to be easy, but it's still a work in progress some days. But I think for me in my career, that was the most challenging part. And then doing this work in a rural community is also really challenging. Generally speaking, a pretty private person, which is kind of hilarious. And I'm on a podcast talking about myself. It's a little weird for me, but you know, you don't really have that element in a rural community. You know, we all go to the same grocery stores and our kids go to school together. And, you know, I think that has presented its own unique challenges for me to do this work in a rural community. It's shifted my idea of what that looks like, you know.
Mm-hmm. How so?
I think when you practice in a larger city, you know, you have to be or think to be so tight with your own privacy and how that works. And I've had to learn to be a little bit more flexible, you know, like I can't, you know, not people are going to know that I've got kids and they're going to know that I've got a husband and they're probably going to know where I live. You're going to know some of these things that when you're in graduate school, it's like people can't know these and these boundaries have to be super firm. And, you know, the boundaries are more flexible just by the nature of living in a small community. So.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like the examples and like kind of templates sometimes of how we talked about ethical issues or gray areas we might run into were always placed in a rural context, like our ethics class.
My life is the textbook. My life is the textbook. I know not to barter services. So, you know, like you can't paint my house for a free therapy session, but you know, like we're going to run into each other PTA meetings and our kids may be on the same basketball team together and just, you know, finding ways to navigate that in the best possible way, you know, is a bit of a challenge, but, you know, it's a work in progress.
Yeah. I hear you. That's fair enough. Well, I'm curious too, you know, you mentioned it was supervisors who kind of got you through some of these challenges that you've had. Can you talk more about the friends and colleagues who supported you to get to where you're at?
Yeah, I think if you ask me, you know, like who my influences are, like we don't have enough time to even talk about it because I've just been so lucky throughout my life to have supportive people. I you know, like my parents are super hardworking people. They're both retired now, but have sort of dedicated their lives, not just to their careers, but being active parts of the community. You know, they serve on boards and committees and are always giving back. And so I think that had a profound influence on me just to be an active part of the community. We used to joke that everybody in town knew where the key to my parents' house was. And my dad used to have this old blue truck. And if we came home and it was gone, it was just because somebody had to borrow it. You know, like that sounds crazy to some people, but like that was just my life. So it, I think, really pushed me to sort of be there for other people, to help others, to meet them where they were, and just be invested in my community and in the careers of folks that I've supervised over the years. So professionally speaking, I, you know, I've had so many great professors, but I would have to say that two that really had an impact on me personally and professionally and in my work would be two of my professors I had when I was in my doctoral program at Spalding. Dr. Brenda Nash taught a class on trauma when I was in graduate school, and it really shifted my perspective in the way that I worked with folks and understanding just how profoundly trauma can affect not just your emotions, but physiologically, and how that response can drive so many thoughts and feelings and behaviors and relationships, and just how deeply entrenched it can become for a person. And so I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention her and that specific class as being such a vital part to the way that I approach my own work. And then the other one is Dr. Danielle Stevens Watkins. She, I took a few classes with her. She was also on my dissertation committee, and she, I could go on for days literally about what I learned from her, but I think just her professionalism, her confidence, the way that she invested in students, the way she invested in me personally, and how she could see someone's potential and invest in them and believe in them really changed me profoundly as you know, the way that I teach and the way that I would mentor and supervise. I think when you're on the receiving end of that investment as a student, it helps so much just to build your confidence and to feel respected and as though you belong in the field and there's a place for you. And so when someone's invested in you that way, you can take criticism or guidance in a much different way when you know that they care and they're invested in you. And so she really changed and shaped the way that I have kind of approached so many different things in my career.
Wow. That's very impactful. That's big.
And I think if you talk to students of either of those professors, my experience is not unique with either of them. That's how special they both really are. And so I think that's cool too. You know, that's my experience and it feels special to me, but they've been able to impact so many students with similar experiences. You know, that's just an amazing career to have, to be able to do that for students.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever just see yourself doing something in your work and you realize you're like channeling them, one of your supervisors?
Yeah, all the time. All the time. And I still remember like certain things that were talked about in classes and things like that. And I'll say something and I'm like, I think Dr. Nash said that or like that's got DSW stamp all over it. So yeah, I was just so fortunate to have some great professors and lots of great guidance when I was in graduate school. And they still impact me today. That's the sign of a really good teacher, that you're still using some of those lessons this far into your career. So,
yeah, definitely. That's awesome. Well, how far into your career are you? I guess I didn't ask about that.
Sure. So I finished internship in 2012, and I ended up fully graduating, dissertation and all, in 2014. And so, but I started practicing right after internship. When I was in graduate school, I got a terminal master's at Morehead State before I went on to Spalding. It's a big time commitment, a big financial commitment, and just wasn't sure if I wanted that or not, or if that was going to be an option for me. So I graduated with my master's degree and was able to go ahead and take the ECCC while I was in graduate school, and did some side work when I was in graduate school. So kind of like worked through school a little bit, and then went into a multidisciplinary group practice after internship and was working there the whole time, which is probably why it took me a couple of years to finish my dissertation. I was just doing the most, probably a little too much. But I defended my dissertation in August of 2014. So
awesome. Congrats. That's great.
Yeah, it's done. Yeah, it's done. That's the best kind of dissertation is one that's finished. So
agreed. Well, you said that you felt like you were doing the most then. Do you still feel like you're doing the most?
I think any of my friends would tell you that, yes, that Carrie does the most. They joke with me that I keep taking jobs. Can you? I joked with my husband. I was like, maybe I should, you know, like not have some. He was like, if you can just start with not taking another job, like, I don't expect you to quit any of the ones that you have, but if we could just not take more, maybe that would be a good step. But I tell people all the time, like, I don't say yes to anything that I don't want to do or I'm not interested in. So if I say yes, it's because I want to do it and I'm interested in it and I think that it's valuable. So I do the most because I just am interested in a lot of things, I guess. I like to sort of vary the type of work that I do. It keeps me engaged. It keeps me sort of on top of things if I can sort of diversify what I'm doing. It would be hard for me, I think, at this point to just do individual therapy all day, every day. And so breaking that up with teaching, breaking that up with some psychological assessment, breaking that up with doing work and talks in schools and things like that, with KPA work, with advocacy work, it helps me to stay engaged and excited about this career. So they laugh at me all the time because I do so many things, but that's what I want to do. And I tell them that, like, I will not say yes to anything that I don't want to do. So it's something that helps keep me excited.
Gotcha. Well, how do you manage all that stuff without getting drained?
Calendars and being respectful of my own time. I lived in Lexington for a long time, and I am originally from Eastern Kentucky, but hadn't lived here since I graduated from high school. So when we decided as a family to come back home, as Eastern Kentuckians say, I wanted to open my own practice so that I could have some flexibility. I have two young kids and I want to be able to take off a day to volunteer when they have inflatables at school or when they're, you know, doing different activities. I want to be able to be a part of that. And so being in my private practice has allowed me to figure that out for myself, to protect my own time. It's my responsibility to do that. So I think that being in my own private practice and making my own rules and taking off when I need to take off helps me to manage all of those things.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool. Nice. Have you had any other challenges associated with being in private practice specifically?
I think that the challenge for me in private practice is that it's on me to say yes and it's on me to say no. Mm-hmm. There's really no lot of private practice psychologists in Eastern Kentucky. So the services are in high demand. It's no secret that wait lists for things like psychological testing and for therapy, especially a doctoral level psychologist, super long, especially somebody that takes health insurance. And I want to be able to help people. I want to be able to serve the community, but I only have so much time. There's only so many days in a week. And so I think that that's a challenge. People know you personally, you know, they're like, help me, Carrie, you know, but it's tough when there's only so many hours in a day. So I think in private practice, that's a struggle because my own administrative assistant, I don't have any staff, it's just me. So being able to sort of field that and get people to where they need to go can be a challenge at times.
Yeah, I hear that. What would you say are some personal strengths that kind of help you manage all of that?
I think that I'm pretty well organized. Mm-hmm. And that helps. I love a calendar. I am pretty focused. So I think that helps for me to manage my time. I'm very much a planner. So I can carve things out in my schedule to know where I'm supposed to be and when. So I think those things are super helpful. And I have this strong sense of just doing what needs to be done. It's very much, and I don't know if it's unique to Appalachia, but it's very much part of our culture. You know, like if this needs to be done, you just do it. Or if someone is doing something and they need help, you just help them. You know, there's really just this strong sense of you do what needs to be done. And so I think for me, that's an asset in private practice when I'm the one that has to do it. You know, I have that strong sense that's sort of just like built into me that is an asset in this situation.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Are there any other like values that kind of inform your work? I can hear this kind of, you know, the importance of being tied into community. That's kind of a common thread throughout. Is there anything else sure. you want to expand on?
Yeah. So to go back to Dr. Stevens-Watkins, I took a multicultural class with her and they split it up like you had to be in groups to talk about different cultures, which was super cool. And we drew names, drew things we didn't even get to pick. And I got Appalachian culture, which is kind of hilarious, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an inside job. We just drew and that's what I got. But one of the things that she assigned us to read was this collection of essays by Loyal Jones, and it was compiled into a book called Appalachian Values. And I remember reading through it and thinking, like, that makes so much sense. Just things like having a personal investment in people and in your community and being a good neighbor and appreciating and recognizing the beauty of where you are and what it has to offer and treating people with respect, using a sense of humor in a way that's comforting and also disarming to people around you to help them feel comfortable. And I think ultimately I just want to be a person that respects people, respects their time, their space, their thoughts and their feelings, and build connections with people. And I think so much of that is rooted in how I was raised and where I was raised in a small rural community.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool that it's kind of in this feedback loop of everything that you came from can be like invested, like you're saying.
It all comes back around, just like the fashions from my high school days are back, coming back around. I'm finally old enough where things come back around. So.
Nice. All right. Well, I think we're kind of coming to a natural close, but I'm kind of curious if you had a few main takeaways for any listeners from what we've been talking about, you know, about things you've learned specifically either in your practice or specifically about your community. Yeah, just any words of wisdom, basically.
Yeah, I think that for me, you can never go wrong when you're a part of something to be invested in it and to be invested in people and to provide a helping hand where it's needed. I think that it's important to not only be a part of something just as a member, but to be a part of what happens within that. You know, like I've loved being a part of KPA, but the part that I've loved the most is being a piece of the advocacy work that we're doing for master's level psychologists and making some changes to their licensure so that they can be more competitive for jobs. They can have hopefully some better access to getting supervision and they can have more competitive career paths. For me, just being a member of something is great, but it feels so much more fulfilling when you can be an active part of it and really foster some change. So I always encourage people to do that. And for anyone who's maybe going into psychology and just thinking about, you know, providing therapy or going a private practice route, I would encourage you to look so broadly because psychology is so much more than just that. And I say that as a person who's doing that, you know, there are so many career paths in psychology and ways that it can impact our world just beyond a therapy room. And so I would encourage folks who might be interested in a career in psychology to look broadly and zoom out at all the possibilities that you can have.
Agreed. That sounds awesome. Well, thank you again so much for being here. I think this was a great conversation, especially for psychologists out there who maybe don't hear the perspective of someone working in a rural community in Eastern Kentucky. So I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.